And together we will say the Sufi invocation, palms pressed together. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of God. Take the vibration of these sacred words as prayer and blow gently into the palms of your hands. And let that blessing flow over your entire being. Just as when we were first initiated, how our murshids took their hands above our crown and traced our aura, we are receiving that same blessing again and again. Okay, here we go. So I wanted to bring in a few things from last class and try to weave it into this class. So I'm bringing in a few quotes and I'll remind us of our practice that we have done together. This is a beautiful quote, and I think that it is not, we can always remind ourselves, there are always these succinct quotes that are like these beautiful blessings that we can bring into our being. But as a reminder, we have also for several months been focusing on teachings that we've titled Clearing the Dust and Polishing the Lamp of the Heart. And so it's around that subject again, but from a slightly different perspective that we look at things. So Murshid Hazrat Anayat Khan says these words: "The heart is a window between mind and soul. For the soul to send its light to the mind, and for the knowledge of the mind to be reflected to the soul." Now, in past teachings, and I'll create a link, we had a diagram, if you recall, those of you that were here will remember, and those of you that viewed later will also remember, there was a diagram with concentric circles. Of course, being the body is the most outer circle, and then it goes mind, heart, soul, consciousness. So these concentric circles. And we had examined that diagram in that way because Murshid talks a lot about these terms, but somewhat, you know, to make that distinction, what's the difference between soul and consciousness? You know, what's the mind versus, because these terms are used in English teachings in different traditions, they can mean different things. So we kind of created this diagram to help us focus. Of course, those things are interrelated and connected, but Murshid does make these distinctions. And so we wanted to look at that. During that time, we also thought we could reverse it. The outside could be soul, then consciousness, then heart, then mind, then body. So you can look at it either way, but here again, the heart is a window between mind and soul. And when we look at our chart, we see that very much so, that the heart is kind of the central band. For the soul to send its light to the mind, and for the knowledge of the mind to be reflected in the soul. So there's this undulating sort of dialogue and transference of information, consciousness, inspiration, wisdom, etc., between these planes of our being. And Murshid also says, therefore, when the heart is closed between communication, when the heart is closed, communication between the soul and the mind is also closed. So it's for us to keep those channels open, so to speak. Because we know that sometimes we can compartmentalize and we can feel frustrated, and maybe perhaps the body's tired but the mind's too active, or the heart's too feeling but we can't put it in words. So, and these things we all understand and know from our experience, but if we can keep those channels open, then we're in, you know, that new term is in the flow. We have a flow. Murshid goes on to say, and again, this is as part of the review from last month, the heart of a spiritual person vibrates continually. The more alive it is, the more it responds to every reflection of beauty on every plane of existence. And of course, this is so important to remember. I mean, Murshid, you know, sort of one of the brands of the message is love, harmony, and beauty. To bring beauty into the world, to be able to act in a beautiful manner, to beautify and clarify the heart, the soul, which and the mind, which then leads to a beautiful manner in which we engage the world and others, God willing. That's always God's grace. Doesn't, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't have much to do with me, but if I can be open, then God's grace will flow. And we worked with four wazifas, and these were a way of describing the aspects of heart of which Murshid talked about. So the first aspect was this highest heaven, and he said that a few messengers reach that point. We could say the great messengers of the great traditions have reached that point. And so that's a place of extreme elevation, but he also talked about it in a way that it could be also a dangerous place to be. Will we be able to call ourselves back? Will we be damaged, or will our minds be blown from what we receive at that point? Maybe some of you have reached somewhat that state in maybe a kind of samadhi in your own meditation. Then the next phase was kind of in a descending order, so this highest heaven, and then the next one, and we use the wazifa Ali just as a reminder. The next phase down is this phase of kind of competence, adaptability, and ability to receive the message that we are given from this highest heaven. And that wazifa that we worked with was Adel. Then the next phase down was Zahir. So yes, can we elevate ourselves? Yes, can we receive the message, try to make ourselves proper vessels? But then can we manifest it? Can we manifest it to view in our manner, in our being, in our expressions, in our interactions? How do we do that? And then the last phase was Aleem. So bringing this insight into manifestation to make it practical, make it acceptable, make it available to all those beings that are around us. And I gave the example last month of Moses having ascended the mountain, receiving the message, bringing the message forward in this manifest form as the Ten Commandments, and then delivering it to the people. So that was kind of the metaphor there. And I just wanted to remind us of that. Now we're moving on because I want to, this is the next piece. And this is drawing from the Gathas on breath, and breath as a bridge to God. So again, these concentric circles, I think we all arrived at during those teachings, the vehicle that moves us between those planes or those levels of existence is the breath. And without the breath, of course, we cease to exist. Now Murshid says this, breath to a Sufi is a bridge between oneself and God. Breath to a Sufi, breath to anyone, we could say, but he's teaching from this tradition, so he says breath to a Sufi is a bridge between oneself and God. And he says, it's like a rope hanging down to earth, attached to the heavens. And he says, the Sufis climb up with the help of this rope. Again, the bridge is the breath, so we're climbing with the assistance of our breath. And he gives this example, he gives two examples. The first one, he says, in Quranic language, this is called Barak. And Barak, you probably remember from your stories and your studies, was the steed, a horse, a winged horse, by the way, not just a horse. And the winged horse, even at times when you see it portrayed, could have some human characteristics. So it has the body and the strength of the horse, the wings of a bird representing breath to elevate us. And sometimes there's a human face. So connecting us back from heaven to earth, heaven to earth. Okay. And this is the vehicle that the Prophet Muhammad used to rise up to that top part of the heart, the highest heaven. So these are how the great prophets and messengers, using the breath as a vehicle to elevate consciousness, receive the message and then bring it through their being, their blessing, their existence, their ability to do this has given us these vast and incredible teachings that we, you know, try to learn from and profit from. Now the Hindus have a name for this also, and the Hindus call this prana, which also means life. I want to talk a little bit more of other meanings of prana. Prana is defined as breath or respiration. That's why when we do our wazifa practices, I talk about inhalations and exhalations, how we're drawing the energy and the breath through the body and from the atmosphere into ourselves. Additional definitions of what prana is, this means life force, spiritual energy, the vital winds. Sometimes in the Ayurvedic traditions, they talk about the winds and the vital winds, the inner winds, and the spirit or the soul. So those are also all names used for prana. Now, prana also has a symbolic, mythical creature, you might say, but also very meaningful. And in Sanskrit, that creature is called, in the Quranic terminology, it's Barak. But in Hinduism, Sanskrit, it's called Garuda, the Garuda bird. Now, Garuda translates in English as eagle. And in Hindu mythology, it is sometimes seen as a kite, which we know that the bird, a kite, has a special call, but it also is very swift, and it can change directions, which is a great spiritual teaching, because can we be both steady and adaptable and fluid? Both. Can we be all those things, I guess? So, you know, we want to be at one point grounded, but also very swift and able to adapt and be fluid and flexible. So that's what the kite teaches. Of course, the eagle is a magnificent creature that can soar and soar. Here where we live, we see this with some of the hawks, and we see it with especially with the pelicans. They're just soaring high in the albatrosses too. So they're just soaring. The breath, they're letting that lift them. So these are all metaphors, symbolic gestures. Well, like the Barak, the steed that carries the Prophet Muhammad, the Garuda bird is also in that way. So the Garuda bird, you see the head of a bird, you see the wings of a bird, but frequently there are two legs that are very human in nature. So again, this connection between elevation and heaven and earth is there in that, in those renderings of the Garuda. Now in the Rig Veda, the sun is compared to the bird. So this light, this divine light, this radiant life-giving light is compared to the bird in flight across the sky. Of course, in Zoroastrian tradition, we hear that too. Shining on there it's swift horse sun carrying the sun across the sky. So the eagle in the depictions of the Garuda bird, and maybe you'll look that up on your own for little homework, carries a plant, and it's an ambrosial plant called soma, and it's a plant from heaven to earth. The soma plant is said to be the master of all plants. It's the healer of disease, and it's the bestower of riches. More about that in a moment. Garuda serves as the mount carrying Vishnu. Now, Vishnu is the preserver and protector of the universe. and Vishnu's role is to return to earth in troubled times and restore balance of good and evil. And I'm sorry to say, I think we are living in troubled times. We have been. And there's a kind of acceleration of violence that's being perpetuated that, at least from my limited view, we could use a few more blessings and prayers and protection. So Vishnu does that for us. And Vishnu's female counterpart, if you were there last month or earlier this month when I gave the lecture for the Center for Universal Wellness, his partner is Lakshmi. And if you were there, remember Lakshmi standing. Also, Vishnu's in a standing position, four arms outstretched. Also, Lakshmi has these additional arms. It's a symbol of the capacity to give more, to bless more, to help more, to come to more aid, more hands, more helpful. So, and Lakshmi, you know, it says that Vishnu is the one that, you know, helps us and assists us, but also brings protection and riches. And if you remember, Lakshmi was standing, and at her feet was this beautiful bowl filled of gold coins. So riches. We could describe that in a material sense, but maybe we could also describe that in a spiritual sense, spiritual riches. You know, we find the kingdom of heaven is within, and everything comes after that. So Murshid goes on to say in this body of teachings that there's no mystical cult in which the breath is not given the greatest importance in spiritual progress. Once a person has touched the depth of their own being by the help of the breath, then it becomes easy to become at one with all that exists on earth and heaven. The breath. I'm reading again from the Gathas on breath, and this is called the life power. The life power. On breath depends the capability and efficiency which one thoroughly does one's work. Now there are indications, and this is so important because by observing your own breath, your own condition and your breath, you can become a very good doctor for yourselves. You can counter what's going on with merely changing the breath. So these are Murshid's instructions, part of them. Shortness of breath creates impatience. Short on patience. Lack of endurance and irregularity. Shortness of breath does that. And that irregularity is in the rhythm of the breath. This then gives rise to confusion and makes a person inclined to be easily upset. So if you find yourself doing this, some people I notice have the natural inclination when they're feeling that just to go, just to take a deep breath. It can help. Sometimes it sounds like it's exasperation, but still one could say that's what they're trying to do is take a deep breath in. And we can do that perhaps in a conscious way, so not as to call attention to ourselves or leave it to interpretation what you mean by such a deep breath. Breath being the life power is the same life power which gives a person the strength to endure all things. To endure all things. We're not put here, I mean, you know, I don't know, maybe your life is, but I'm waiting for mine to become all puppy dogs and rainbows and unicorns and, you know, flowers and gardens without mosquitoes and such, or fires or droughts or whatever. But the fact is with the breath turning inward, we get strength to endure all things. We fortify ourselves to endure all things. Murshid goes on to say, one always will find that those who easily get cross upset quickly, instantly annoyed, have something wrong with the breath. So again, if you're finding yourself in this way, please turn to the breath. You can become so much of a master of life by tuning to the breath. People, ourselves, we, not knowing our difficulty, we can get annoyed with such people, and we can actually get annoyed with ourselves. And what we often do is we put those people aside that are difficult. We may even do that a little bit to ourselves. We get off put even from ourselves. And these people, or we may find that even of ourselves, we find ourselves disagreeable or others around us disagreeable. But again, Murshid is indicating this is all a matter of the breath. What a person needs, Murshid says, is training of breathing. When our body, when their body, when everyone's body and mind is so repaired, one will find no more disagreeableness in their nature. Wow, God willing, in our nature. When the body and mind are so repaired, in brackets, with the breath, the assistance of the breath, one will find no more disagreeableness in our nature, in their nature. When a person gets tired of their work or feels lack of enthusiasm to complete their work, who hasn't felt that? I'm just too exhausted to take this on, or it makes me tired to even think about it, right? We've all done it, you know? But he says, when a person gets tired of their work and feels a lack of enthusiasm to complete their work, when one feels a lack of interest and feels absence of inspiration, it is all often caused by the disorder of the breath. So regulating the breath, observing the breath, there's so many things we can do with the breath. You know, we can project it out at a distance, expanding ourselves, bring it back to us. We can move it in different directions. And all these things are very, very, very important. I want to get to a practice, but I also think first, before we do the Wazifa practice, I want to talk about a specific breath that that I was given, is done in the Sufi movement, but it is not just exclusively of Sufi movement practice. It actually is drawn from a yogic practice. We know Murshid drew his inspiration from the Persian tradition, Zoroastrianism. He also drew it from the yogic tradition. And so this stretched breath is based on a practice called the Kapalbhati Pranayama. Pranayama, breath, prana, life force, life-giving. Okay. And this breath is given. I was watching a show, and in that show, there were people in open air, and Murshid often says, do the practices in open air if you can, by a window or outdoors. But this was being done outdoors, and deep breathing exercises in the sun and the open air. And at that point, it was an innovation, really, of sorts in the medical profession. But that breath was done at a time when tuberculosis was on the rise, and this helped strengthen the lungs. And so it is said of this Kapalbhati Pranayama, it improves the lungs, it improves the kidneys and liver functions. And apart from this, it boosts our immune system. It regenerates the body to feel relaxed and energized, both. So you're relaxed, but you're energized and alert. It's a great gift. And this yoga has been proven to cure many breathing disorders, such as asthma, sinus problems, and even TB. And I really felt inspired to bring that in, just watching that little television program about deep breathing and how that may influence or may have assisted people in either not getting TB, or if getting it, developing a larger lung capacity. So that was something that comes from that. So more about the stretch breath before we do it, and then I will explain it in somewhat detail and we'll do it together. The stretch breath is an aid for developing balance and mastery by controlling the breath. It is of help when one is overtired. Does anyone ever feel overtired? It also helps when one is overstimulated. So I can't focus because I'm overstimulated. I feel like a live wire. Or confused. Again, the mind becomes cloudy. Overwhelmed with one's duties and tasks. Has a nervousness or anxiousness and is in need of grounding. So I know that this breath is very important. And let me tell you when and how and why I received it. Some of you know that I had a very strong and dramatic Kundalini experience. And I had been asking many peers and many Murshids, what would they do? What would be the way to help me cope with this vast amount of energy that came in? And I never received what I viewed were helpful or clear instructions, which made me, no fault of anybody's, but made me realize that perhaps this was an experience that not everyone has experience with, and so therefore the answers weren't satisfactory, at least to me, or helpful. But when I asked Murshid Hidayat, he took a deep breath, and he said, well, you need to do the stretch breath. Do you know the stretch breath? I said, no, I've never heard of the stretch breath. Well, I'm going to give it to you. And he transmitted it to me. There are different forms, there are different ways, but most important is what we're going to experience today. Now, the other thing, there was also a time when I was very busy, of course, you know, with my position at the college and trying to help my mom and be helpful when she wasn't well and, you know, juggling things, juggling my research and lectures and prep for school and students, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, inevitably, maybe an hour before I was supposed to leave to go teach, you know, I'd get a call from Murshid Hidayat. He would have a project for me. And sometimes I try not to really lament, but I would say, I'm a little busy. I might have to wait to get to that. And he'd say, are you doing your stretch breath? I'd say, I'm trying to be mindful of it. And he said, well, you know, Nuria, it's like milking a cow. That's what I'm doing with you. The more you milk the cow, the more milk the cow gives. So his answer was, get to work, stop complaining, don't be a puss, do the breath practice. So when you feel this way, and you know what? He said to me, you can use it at the college. When there's a lot of grading to be done, you do the breath, pause, do the breath practice. You'll see, just like this, everything will get done. Everything will get organized. It'll go very easily. And you know what? He was absolutely right about that. So I offer this to you as a gift from Murshid Hidayat, and please try to apply it in your life. It doesn't take long to do, you know, but it is worth it. It is a great gift. So let me explain this breath, and I will give it to you the way in which it was given to me. So there are two phases of the breath. The inhalations are always the same. So we begin the breath, the stretch breath, with an inhalation to the count of four, and I'll keep us in count, and then we blow out through the mouth like this, not, we just very slow, a slight opening in the mouth. Now here's the thing that happens with the stretch breath. The first breath is into the count of four, out to the count of six. Then we go into the count of four, out to the count of eight. Then we go into the count of four, out to the count of 10. In four, out 12, in four, out 14, in four, out 16, in four, out 18, in four, out 20. Now he gave it to me going up to 30, but for today we'll do 20 because I don't want to stress anyone. If you can go farther, do, but if not, at least 20, try. Now what does this teach us? if we go into the count of four and out to the count of six, or we go into the count of four, out to the count of 20 for dramatic effect. We obviously have to have good control over our breath. We have to know how much to keep back and how much to give. We have to know that on that beat of four, we need to take a full expansive breath. And when we start to exhale, we need to know how much to retain the breath and how much to give out at what rate, or we run out of the breath. So this does give a great expansion. Now, after we reach into the count of four, out to the count of 20, we reverse the process. Then we go into the count of four, out to 18, in four, out 16, and so on, to return back to in four, out six. Is that clear? Now you're gonna experiment with this, but one of the things that helps me as I'm counting, I sort of imagine the middle point of my exhalation. So if I'm, for example, for the most dramatic one, in four, and then out 20, I kind of notice, like, you could even divide it into beats of four, or beats of five. You want to start measuring your exhalation, especially think at midway point, 10. Okay, I should be half empty and half full, and I need to give that out. Now, but the object is, by the time you get to the very end of the count, to be very empty so that it allows you to take a full breath, the next breath. Is that clear? You ready to try it? Okay, so let's take a minute and just sort of feel your body. Notice your breath. Breathe in and out very naturally, because we will be exaggerating that breath in a moment. We're going to start with a very strong exhalation to the count of four. Then we'll breathe in our first count of four for the practice, okay? So let's breathe out. Completely empty. In. Out. In. Out, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, 20. In, out 18, in, out 16. In, out 14. In, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, relax. May I ask, were the instructions clear and were you able to follow? Okay. And notice how you feel. Does anything in your being feel different? If you want to unmute and share any observations, please feel free to do so now.
Go ahead.
Robert and Janice, you go ahead, please.
Oh, I felt a shift in my low back. It felt good.
Good. Very good. It got relaxed, did it?
Yeah.
Had you been having some tension there?
Yes.
Good. I'm so happy that you could feel that. Robert, did you have anything to offer?
Calmness.
Yes.
More calm.
Yes, definitely.
Better breathing rhythm.
Yeah, it expands that capacity, expands our capacity and our the stream of the life force, the prana, yeah.
But why do we go backwards? Because as you continue to go forwards, you're calming down, everything is evening out, but why do you go backwards? I don't know the logic behind that aspect.
I think, again, it's to the control of the breath. And, of course, our more natural form would be like naturally in 4 and out 4 or out 6. It's not going to be that exaggerated breath. So it's to return us. And here's another way of answering it. Perhaps in our previous conversation, we talked about this. I remember during my visits at the Sri Aurobindo Ashram, they do a kind of yoga that's called integral yoga. It's different than other forms of yoga. And the main thing about that yoga, it's highly spiritual, but the other part is you must know how to adapt and bring that into everyday life. And sometimes my good friend, Karunaji, would say to me, I don't understand these others. I mean, she lived in India. She understood and had participated in yoga, but she... In her learning, it brought her to the teachings of Sri Aurobindo, and she had said, as far as I'm concerned, there are many yogas, Kundalini being one of them, where she said what it does is it raises the energy, but it doesn't teach a person how to bring that back down to earth. So often people can be very ungrounded and lofty, but, you know, how do you bring that into practical a reality, you know, instead of being so disconnected? And so she said, as far as I'm concerned, that's like using a ladder to climb up the roof and then kicking the ladder out and not being able to get back down. So okay. We use this breath to expand and we bring it back down to contract, but we are in a more relaxed, you know, perhaps pain-free in many ways, environment within ourselves. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's very practical. I mean, that's what I love about Sufism. I mean, it is philosophical, but it is practical. These are things you can really use in everyday life. And I think this practice is probably best done if one can do it in the morning to prepare for one's day. So thank you. Thank you for the question. Yeah. Let me know how that works, Janice.
Let us know.
I know you'll do it and you'll let me know. Nur Latifa, did you have something to share?
I was just going to say, I felt more concentrated. It really concentrated me in a way.
Fantastic. So it's is it like a focus? Did that happen? You felt focused?
Yes.
Yeah.
And like my whole being could just be sort of, it felt strengthening too. Strengthening at the same time.
I like that word. I mean, the breath is like a tonic, you know? It really is. So think of it as medicine or a tonic that you can use. Anyone else have an experience? Gemma, I know you've been working with it. Anything?
I was going to say something.
Oh, Raheem. I don't see you, Raheem. I'm sorry, but go ahead. Yes, please. Shift my view here.
I'm glad that Robert asked the question he did, because it made me realize that there is a sense of focus and control when I was done with this breath. Not only did I feel grounded, but I felt very focused. I felt very pinpoint in my awareness.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I could see the beginning before you start your jobs, whatever it might be. This is a very powerful practice.
I'll tell you, for me, it was almost like a miracle, because when I was juggling so many balls, you know, as a professional and in private life and as a householder, I mean, it was, I mean, when I look back and Joe and I talk about it, it's like, God, it was almost like superhuman. But, you know, I did it with this breath, as other breaths as well, because I think the breath is really very important in our practice. We've just experienced that, I think. Did anyone else? So thank you for your comment. Hi.
Hi, Nuria. I wanted to say first, this is I'm very glad to be here today, because this is very timely for me. I may be starting a job this week, and the kind of difficulties that you describe this practice addressing are the exact kind of difficulties I'm concerned about and that I've had for many years.
Yeah.
So I wanted first to thank you for presenting this practice. Secondly, to comment that I found myself getting tense sort of in my mid back. And is there anything I should do to avoid that? Because I do plan to continue doing this breath.
Yeah. Where was it in your mid back, may I ask? Just the middle around the heart, or adrenals? What would you say?
I would say, well, here I can point, I suppose, sort of this area right here. Mm-hmm. Slightly below the shoulder blades and just laterally across.
Okay. Yeah.
The part of the rib cage that bulges out the most at the back.
Yeah. What I think and know from my own experience, that area has a tendency to get tight to me also, but I know that it does when the breath isn't reaching it. So I'm wondering if you might try the practice. And you know this because you're such an amazing vocalist. I mean, you know how to expand that area, don't you? And contract it. And maybe really, I was thinking of this too before we did the practice. I don't know about our time. It's going quickly. But here's a part. Gemma and I, we have a friend in the Netherlands. I know Safia, you know him as well. Sikander, and his career has been as a woodwind and brass musician in concert halls. You know, he plays with big orchestras and stuff. And I remember one day I was watching him with Gemma. He was talking about, I mean, his big thing is breath. He was always brought into summer school to talk about the breath. Now, one of the things that he was showing Gemma was this area right here, and I think at camp we've done that, which would be in concert with that area of your back. And he told Gemma, instead of, you know, sometimes we our stomachs go this way, or our we breathe up and down with our shoulders. But he suggested that she bring the breath into here, these sides, and thinking about expanding kind of that rib cage. And it is very interesting when you think about it, because what is that connected to? This is the heart, and these are the wings. So it's like giving breath to that. Now, I don't think he ever said that to Gemma, but that's my own experience of doing the breath in that way. So I would really consciously try to direct the breath to that area to expand it. And you might need a massage or a chiropractor, who knows?
could very well be.
That's right, right? Have one of the guys there give you a little rub down in that area. You know, sometimes my adrenals need to get a little re-stimulated, and I'll tell Joe, I'll joke, I'll say, Joe, will you beat me on the back? So he's so good. He'll take his, you know, his wedding ring off so he doesn't hurt his hand or me. And, you know, it's just like, give me some karate chops, right? Like that. And so, you know, we're living here like in a fishbowl because we don't have blinds or anything up. You know, people can look right in. Of course, we're on the 14th floor, but from across they could see us. I said, oh God, people are going to think you're beating me. But just, I lean over the kitchen counter. This is practical, right? I lean over the kitchen counter and he just does that up and down the spine and side to side in that area. And what that does is does stimulate the adrenals. And you can even do it to yourself. I remember I was studying yoga with someone from the lineage of, totally blanking out, but it'll come to me. And I'm going to stand up and turn around now. And this is one of the things that they did as part of the practice. So you take your own hands and you just do this to stimulate the kidneys and the adrenals. Gemma, this might be good for Tom. Kidneys and adrenals, or Marilee and Dennis, if you could share that with Tom. You can do that for yourself. And of course, if you're having trouble with, like, you know, this area is for like the bowels. And of course, this is for stomach. You know, there are all these pressure points you can use to kind of help stimulate the various organs. But the breath will help that too. You know, think of it as you're doing the breath. Let me just keep going a little bit further. This stream is coming, so let me finish. When you're breathing in, you are breathing in with the lungs, but you imagine that that breath is circulating throughout the entire body and massaging like an internal yoga your organs, okay? So there's many layers. It will be experienced as you do the practice, but I would suggest you try to do it the next month and see what you realize from it. Now, someone was trying to say something. Who was that?
Raheem.
Raheem, thank you, honey.
You're smacking the sides. There is a practice that Kabir would teach us in the mornings at Sufi camp before we would start with his poetry. And a lot of it had to do with exactly what you're saying, hitting your back, hitting your sides, going down your legs. He said he does that every morning and every night. And it just brought that practice back to me. It's like, it kind of ties in the breath with this stimulation of the organs through your not pounding, but some kind of stimulation. All right, I will shut up.
And I really appreciate you saying that. And you could even look up people that are interested in this further. And some of you may know, like Savitri, you probably already know as a dancer and things. But, you know, like I have an underactive thyroid, so I tap it every day. I mean, I have to take medication. I'm hoping one day I can be away from that. But I tap. You know, I like the Tarzan, you know, right here, I get real sensitive. They're kind of secondary chakras in this area. Sometimes I talk, you know, I think, oh, you know, like Tarzan. I mean, that's medicine. You know, we do pull yoga and we do this. We slap the arms, you know, we slap our arms and slap up here. People watching us will say, what are you doing beating yourself up down in the pool? But it's part of the, you know, it's part of the therapy. It's part of the deal. So you could look up on YouTube. There's like whole things about, you know, slapping the hands, slapping the arm. They give seminars on it. It's very, very good. It's kind of a self-massage of sorts. Okay. Was there anyone else that was going to say something? Savitri, I thought you were unmuted for a little while there. Did you want to join in and say something, share something?
Yes, I was going to say I felt the concentration, and I also felt my natural breath slowed down afterwards.
That's really important, and we know why. You know, based on this teaching, go back and read it. It will inform you. These are some of the things that, you know you're reckoning with, and it'll really help you. I think this is one of the we don't want to overload anybody with practice. So I'm always about keeping it simple, not adding too many things. So feel free to let other things go as you add this in, okay? I think mixing the medicines can be dangerous. So I've said that many, many times. Sometimes less is really, truly more. And I remember the advice that I got. I was traveling in India, and I had been invited to a monastery in southern India for various reasons, and I was meeting with the lamas there, and I said to them, I feel like there's so much to learn in Buddhist philosophy, and I don't know in this life if I'll ever get there. And they said to me, all you have to do is know one practice really well and do that with great devotion. And it is like the golden key that you enter into the treasure chest, and when you open it up, all the knowledge will come through. So it's not important what we do or how much of it, but what is important to do it with concentration. This practice will help, obviously, and devotion and sincerity. And, think about it. Some of the greatest prophets were illiterates. They weren't doing vast studies, but they were receptive to God. They were receptive to the message of God. So, as much as we can, again, clear the dust and polish the lamp, so much the better for us, okay? Anyone else? Focus and concentration, it's really true. We get all of our things done very quickly. You want any closets cleaned out or drawers or cupboards? Try to do this breath first and see how fast it'll go. Be easy, easy, easy. I promise it will be. It sounds like incredibly simple, but it is, and it sounds naive. It's not. You'll see the difference. Okay. Anyone else would like to share? Had you all done this practice before? Sorry.
Hi. Just one word. Lightness. I just felt so light. Not so heavy anymore after.
It's true, isn't it? It elevates us, expands. I mean, that expansion, I think, significant. So had most of you done this practice? I know I've given it to a few of you. I don't know. Okay.
Thank you for sharing this practice. I've been to many prana workshops, and I've never heard of this one. The only problem I had was that you are supposed to go slowly because the breath is so powerful and it can overpower you. So when you said 20, I thought I've never done 20. I only been like to 12, right? Is this going to be wrong for me? Because I experienced before that I've done too much and it really makes you sick. So in about half of the exercise, I kind of stopped and I was afraid and I said, I'll wait what other people experience who didn't do it before, because it just, the worries came in my mind from everything I've heard.
Yeah. I think that's okay. And I think maybe as you, if you want to continue with the practice, do it and do it little by little. But really what it's teaching us is mastery of the breath. And oh my God, that is the key to everything. If we become master of our own breath, we become master of the universe. I mean, we really do, because it's our inner world we're mastering. And with the inner world, we become more masterful. We can then cope with the external world. Give it a try. It's not easy. And I really, I want to also apologize, because I meant to say to people, if you're uncomfortable going further, just stop at a certain place and wait for us to return to you. So that's also very valid. So, but don't be afraid. This practice won't hurt you.
Next time I won't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. But that's good to watch the mind, how fear is something different comes up. That might be something just to look at. It may be a common thing. Okay. Are we ready to move on? Is everybody willing to stick with me a little while longer? Because we've been at an hour, but I'd really like to introduce this other practice. I was worried I didn't have enough material. I guess I had too much more. I talked too much. Okay. So I want to do these two practices, and I want to tell a little story because I think it's important. I'm not going to say who said it, but I have a very good friend in what was the Sufi order and now is the Inayatiya order. It's someone I respect very much and someone that has a great deal of responsibility in that organization and has transitioned through the different iterations and leadership of the organization and is still serving to a very high and demanding capacity. We're friends and sometimes we talk on the phone. At one point, and this was a number of years ago, but it really stuck with me and this practice has stuck with me as a result, and I have used it myself. The individual had contacted me and told me they were on a kind of hiatus or a retreat. They had gone to their parents' home so they could be away from things and was working with the practice because they felt that, and this is the danger that can happen, you know, when you're in service or you're functioning in a high capacity within your own professional field, there can be burnout. It can happen in the spiritual realm as well. Many people that are functioning in those high capacities do take time for themselves to be able to recollect, bring, you know, all the particles home and find their own rhythm and balance. This individual, I'd never heard or seen them in this way. I said, what are you doing? What would you assign to yourself? If someone came to you, what would you assign to them as a practice and what are you giving to yourself? This person, of course, is very capable of understanding the different energies of the sacred names, the wazifas, and how to use them to help cure themselves. The practice that I'm about to give you is that practice. And I think it has a very special blessing because the person that shared that they were doing that practice, I thought was quite humble and honest and revealing by sharing that with me. And I again say, use this practice because I think you'll find it of great benefit if you ever reach a point in the life when you're feeling a bit overwhelmed or tired, and who doesn't and who hasn't felt that way. If you're living in a life, you are. So the practice is two sacred names and we will do them together. The first sacred name is Yamuhi. I'll spell it. M-U-H, there's an emphasis on the Yamuhi, and then it's M-U-H-Y-I, or you could see it Y-E-E, you know, longer E. This means divine life giver, the giver of life, the bestower of life, and its recitation of Yamui is helpful for those who have lost vitality. I know that has happened. I know some of you occasionally reach out to me and share that, and I know that's true of myself. The breath and the prayers and the wazifas are always my cure. I've given up. The doctors have been very kind to me, but I was at one point, they were trying to make me well with too much medicine, and they finally figured out that wasn't helping me. So I'm off all of that medicine, and then I'm using my practices. And it's holistic, we might say. Okay. I do believe in medicine, by the way. If you need it, take it, okay? I'm not saying get off all medicines. For me, it was sometimes more toxic than helpful. Modern medicine is a miracle, and medications are also miracles to get over things or to cope with long-term illness. So please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I have a great deal of respect. So the recitation of Yam Hui is helpful for those who have lost vitality or who are depressed. And you know, it's natural. We've been going through a very difficult time. People are feeling very isolated. People feel depressed. They feel sad. They feel confused. Okay. But this helps. The other meanings of Yam Hui is the one that's animated, to revive, to revitalize, to call into being, to be whole, to summon, to invite, to hasten, to quicken, okay? And it comes from the root in Arabic. It's a consonant-based language, so some of you have studied that. So it comes from H, emphasis on H, why. Arabic is so fascinating that it is a consonant-based language and the phonetic markings change the meaning of the word. So if you see this H-Y-Y, you may recognize that as the root also of the sacred name Hay, which is ever-living. So it is used in Arabic in this way. It means life and it means living, but also these variables like Muhi, it has the same impulse and energy behind it. So Ya Muhi, Ya Muhi. The other sacred name we're going to do together is called Ya Mu'id, Ya Mu'id, spelled M-U apostrophe I-D, or it could be E-E-D, Mu'id. Okay. Now, Ya Mu'id is the divine restorer, the revivifier, the renewer, the recreator. And Al-Mu'id is, it also means the only one who has the capacity of mercifully giving refuge. The one who restores, the one who revives us to the spiritual essence of who we really are. And its root is W-D, apostrophe W-D. And in classical Arabic, this connotation means to return to something, to repeat, to reproduce, to come back home, to restore, to renew, to call, to summit, to invite. Okay, so it's doing this. And I thought it was very interesting that this word is has some qualities. I don't know why, but the image of like restoring a beautiful old piece of furniture. You know, first, and this is the same process that we use with the breath to polish the mirror of the heart. So first we clear away the debris and the dust. Then we use some sandpaper, you know, to get all the old paint off, or paint stripper. We're removing those things that are not true to who we really are. And then we sand it very finely. And sometimes we just use natural oils, which there are some of those words, you know, Ya Rahman Rahim, means to like oil something, a dry piece of skin, to make it pliable again, to make it flexible again, instead of dry and old and brittle. So these kinds of things, and this is what we're doing to the heart, massaging it with the breath, with the practices, polishing the mirror of the heart again, so the heart, as was said earlier, can receive the message and give it to the soul, and the soul can send the message to the heart, and the heart can then express it through the mind and the body. So these practices can do that for us. And I think even if we don't know the meaning of the words, if we just say them with devotion, I think we get it. It comes, the vibration comes to us and we understand it. Okay. So, Ya Muhi, Ya Mu'id. And we're going to say the full mala 33 times or 34 times with Ya as a prefix. O divine, O divine, O divine giver of life, O divine restorer, revivifier. So that's what we mean by Ya, the divine one, the divine sacred name we invite into ourselves. So we'll say Ya Mu'i, Ya Mu'id, 34 times. And then after that, we move to a whisper, more subtle vibration, and we'll use the inhalation on Mu'i. We drop the Ya, and then Mu'id out, breathing in Mu'i, and out Mu'id. And then we'll move to silent for the last 33, and we Just feel it breathing in, muid, and out, muid. So when you're feeling discombobulated, spent, tired, exhausted, depressed, confused, in need of new life, try this practice. See if it helps. It does. At least it's helped me. And God willing, it can also be of service to you. Okay. By the way, we say the practices on a mala of 101 beads. And if you were there a few weeks ago when I gave the lecture on the Divine Feminine, we know that Muhammad gave his daughter Fatima a gift. She had gone to ask for a servant to help her. She was a young bride, and it was a difficulty managing a household with the amount of guests they had coming and going, amount of cooking she was doing, cleaning, and so forth. And so she went to her father in the hopes of asking for a helper, a servant, to help her with her household chores. And he said, I have something even better to give you. Would you like that gift instead? And she said, you know, she was humble, so she took what her father, you know, she didn't feel necessarily privileged. She was humble and realized the greatness of her father, and she said she accepted it. And he said, I want you to go to bed. And at night, when you go to bed, I'm giving you three helpers. And the first one is Subhanallah. He said, say that 34 times. Subhanallah is glory be to God. For 34 times, the next 34 beads, I'd like you to say Alhamdulillah, meaning all praise is due to God. So God is glory and all praise is due to God. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And the last 33 was Allah O Akbar, or sometimes said Allahu Akbar. This means simply God is great. God is great. So we kind of follow this path of doing these practices in the same way. 34 Yahai, 34 Whisper, 33 to conclude the 101 beads. Okay? Okay. We begin. Ya Muhi, Ya Muid. I would suggest that when you say Muhi, you bring your head up slightly, imagining you're breathing in, calling upon this life-giving force, this bestower of life, the one that can help give us vitality and help lift us out of our depression. And with Muid, once we breathe that in, Muid. Bring your head down with the thought of infusing your being with this divine restoration, feeling revivified, renewed, and this merciful refuge that brings us back to who we really are, the essence of our being. Okay? Let's give it a try. Deep breath in and out. Ya Mui, Ya Muid, Ya Mui, Ya Muid, Ya Muhi, 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 Ya Muid. Ya Muhi, Ya Muid, 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 Ya Muhi, Ya Muid. Ya Muhi, Ya Muid, Ya Muhi, Ya Muid, Ya Muhi, Ya Muid, Yamuhi, Yamuhit, 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 Yamuhi, Yamuhit. Now we breathe in. And now just silently feeling the atmosphere, breathe in and out. Yamui, Yamuit. Murshid says, regular and rhythmic breathing gives health to the body and mind both. So you see the stretch breath, what it did. These practices also moving the breath in a certain way, hopefully, and we'll have some time to share. You have had an experience to see how this may affect you. So regular and rhythmic breathing gives health to the body and mind both. Inspiration comes from above, but it comes as a light. It comes as a light. It is the work of the mind to receive it. If the mind is not ready to receive it, the inspiration will come, but it will not be realized. So all this is training us to tune in, to feel the atmosphere. Spirit of guidance is what it's often called in our tradition. Listening to the spirit of guidance, feeling the inspiration. But again, these different levels need to be clarified so the communication is clear and strong. And that's what we're striving for. So I thank you so much for staying with me, and also just a little PSA. I keep getting these bills for our various services that help us get the message out there. If you feel so inclined, there's a way to donate through the website. There's also a way to donate through my Facebook page. I think those links are out there on my Facebook page, and of course the website. You just sufi-message.org, click on donate. So that would be great if you can give a little bit. I know some of you do it on a yearly basis or on a monthly basis, and I get that. You know, give as you can. And deeply appreciated, deeply appreciated. So that's my little PSA. And the teachings will be up in a few days so you can review them. And I'll put the study guide up there as well so you can review that and contemplate. And the practice will be there also with explanation. And may we close now for the purposes of this recording. Then we can stay if you wish to have some spiritual conversation and sharing. But we'll close now with the prayer Khatun. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Amen.